Yeah,
but
you know what I'm saying? Like, anything to just end that conversation at this point.
I was going to say, this Pope actually seems all right, and from here we're going to, like... not the thing I normally say, but this Pope actually
seems... For a given value of Popes, like, if we're operating on a scale of Popes only, yeah, decent guy. Decent guy for a Pope.
All right, I'm going to timestamp this in 10 minutes, and we're going to start this up. Player 2 PixelCast episode 190. I am your host, Tim Henderson, and super proud of myself because I did not have to look up that episode number for the first time, probably in at least a year. Knew that Rob wasn't going to be on, got on top of that shit.
The small victories, the small victories.
You take them where you can get them, man. And just for reference, we're recording this pretty early just because schedules and shit. So we are still like in a zone of bad news gaming, world related as well, but it's a gaming podcast. So in our immediate splash zone, that's happening. And if we are not talking about a whole bunch of other shit that's just happened, which is honestly kind of very a non-zero chance, let's say it could also be some terrible new shit happening 2 weeks from when we're recording this. That is why we are coming at you time traveling. You're so welcome back. You're not camping anymore.
Not camping. I came back a day early just to do this podcast. No, not really. It was pissing down rain and we decided not to hang around.
Also a pretty good reason. I mean, you could have said that because then, you know, if we weren't recording today, you would have to do this by yourself and then handle all the editing and everything it comes with.
Yeah, yeah. So. It's way easier to just come home early and make Tim do all the work. Yeah.
Yeah. Come home early. We're going to talk about some pirates because, you know, you've been playing Black Flag. That's in the air. It seems like a fun thing. And just as a means of, like, overthinking our topic to a degree that is probably going to be comical, we have a guest in the form of Dr. Tamsin Page. Would you like to introduce what your PhD is in?
Oh, my PhD was not on pirates. My PhD was on UN Security Council interventions, which did involve pirates. But that was only a small part of the PhD. But my MPhil work and the book I've just sent to publishers is on the laws of maritime piracy, starting with the narratives from the Roman Empire through to contemporary piracy that we're seeing in Gulf of Guinea and Straits of Malacca and all of that. So that book has just gone to publishers. So it should be out kind of in the next, I don't know, academic publishing timelines, maybe 12 months. But yeah, so I am apparently, for my sins, an expert on the laws of piracy.
So if we want to talk about having somebody overqualified for the goofy topic that we have at hand.
The very definition of overqualified for a video game podcast.
Very much reached out.
Look, I do what I can, and I love my game, so I'm very happy to be here and talking about all things pirates in video games.
Excellent.
We'll get to you, but first, I was going to say, but first, you know, we have just games we're playing right now, but there is actually a pretty hard segue, I think, for all of us into it, but we'll go with the easy one. Huso, apparently that remake of Black Flag turned out pretty all right.
Yeah, it did. It's the kind of remake I really like to see, because a lot of thought has gone into what made the original release great, and also where it was kind of, you know, a little bit lacking, and Ubisoft have put their brains into it, which is it's not something you get to say that often these days.
That's rare for them, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It feels nice. It was a surprise. So, for those that don't know, Black Flag came out in, I don't know,
2012 or 13, I think.
13, yeah, something like that. Really early in the PS4's lifespan. I think it was a launch title actually for PS4. It focused on an assassin who wasn't really an assassin. He was a pirate first, and then kind of became an assassin later in the game. And you get to jaunt around the Caribbean and cause all sorts of mayhem in your lovely big pirate ship that you upgrade relentlessly with more cannons. And they've captured all that. They've captured that wonderful, you know, Disney kind of swashbuckling feel of piracy in this with a great story. And what they've added is some really nice kind of modern touches, as well as a bit more depth to the story. They've added some key crew missions, which feel like a bit, you know, BioWare-ish, in that you find more out about your crew and where they come from. And there's some really interesting stories there. There's a cool story about a padre who found God after being a pirate, and then the Templars kill his flock, and so he kind of becomes a pirate again. And you know, and then it's a nice story. It's nothing, you know, groundbreaking, but it's a really fun one to play out in the way it works. So these really nice additions to a game that was already pretty good. If there's any issue, there was some graphical glitches and things like that, but you know, I feel like they're probably fixed by now. I haven't jumped in since the day one patch, so that could have been resolved.
I mean, I'm guessing it's not going to make the Mount Rushmore of graphical glitches for
No, it's not Unity.
Assassin's Creed.
No, it's not some. Unity. No, we're not seeing skeletons and all sorts of weird stuff, except when you're supposed to. They've really improved the meta games that were in it, where the old one had a mobile phone meta game where you could send your fleet off to do certain missions.
Oh, God, it came out during that time, didn't it? Where everything had like phone integration.
So they've made that a bit more sensible for this modern age, in that you can go into your captain's cabin and kind of send your fleet off into different missions to get your resources, or you know, improve your standing in an area, or create more risk. If you send too many piracy missions, all of a sudden there's more risk in the area, so you get attacked more often. Really stunning game. Like underwater especially is gorgeous, like really good looking game. It's one of those games I spent a lot of time in the photo mode, which I don't usually do, but I felt like I've really got to take some photos of this. This is really cool. Stunning colors, and I wouldn't say it's going for realism, but it's going for that really bright Caribbean feel, and they've really nailed that. And the weather effects go along with that really well as well. So I think this is a really well thought out remake. It's not just a coat of paint. There's been a lot of thought go into it. Gameplay's better. The parkour's better. Everything has been improved.
I was about to say, is it as smooth to play as Shadows was? Like, have they really sanded down the edges?
They have, except in one specific instance where the furniture is not movable. So if you're running through a tavern or something, the furniture can't move, which is something you see in games all the time these days, that the furniture just breaks. And there's a reason for that. Trying to run over furniture is a pain in the ass, and so it gets in the road, and it does a bit here. You know,
that's very like, funny that, to me, the idea that you're sprinting and you like hit a bar stool and just kind of come to a hard stop.
Yeah, it does that here, and it feels very weird. But it's a very small part of the game, so I really don't want to emphasize this, but it is a little thing that feels like it's left over from the original game, because Shadows let you do that. So I think that's just a leftover that's there. But otherwise, the ship combat's awesome. It's so much fun. Just
God, you'd hope so.
Cruising around, and they've taken a few lessons from Skull and Bones. I mean, for all its faults, Skull and Bones had really good ship combat. And so, it's a really good remake. And if you liked the original, go grab it. If you never played the original, it's top three Assassin's Creed game easily, if not number one, depending on your point of view. So
it's in everybody's favorite list, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's Odyssey, then this. But yeah, a lot of people that have Black Flag first. So, you know, it's really good. Get amongst it.
And by all accounts, the PS5, you were playing on console, actually, if I read the review.
Yeah,
correctly.
I was playing on Pro, PS5 Pro, and on standard PS5. I mixed between the two, and it ran at 40 frames with ray tracing on the Pro really well. But even on the PlayStation, I had it at 60 without any ray tracing, obviously, and it still looked pretty good. Like, you know, not enough to complain about, that's for sure, the differences.
Yeah, it seems like Ubisoft's engines at the moment, was it Snowdrop at the moment? I'm getting
Snowdrop,
the previous one. Yeah,
it's Snowdrop.
It's making me depressed to think that they could also move on to Unreal Engine. We're just going to get this uniform sludge over everything.
That would be disappointing, because they've really mastered that engine, I think, for the current hardware, and really... really looks good. Yeah,
well, I will actually look into it. I was actually looking at the original in my Steam library going, no, I should probably, if I'm going to spend the hours.
It's pretty hard to get the original running properly on a current PC. Like, oh, there's a lot of issues. So it's probably, if you're keen on it, it's worth, you know, it's an Ubisoft game, so it'll be on sale in 3 months.
Also, I'm laughing because I know that's true. Nobody should. Yeah, it, I know for the health of the industry,
I've never paid for an Ubisoft game. I think it's always come free with something.
Yeah, You'll get it cheaper for sure in 3 months, yeah.
Yeah, this is probably the company's problem is, like, there is a knowledge, like, I can get this for $20 if I hold tight and I don't have to hold tight that long.
Nope.
And the reliability of that price drop has probably not really hurt them. Because, like, if you're a Nintendo game, you may as well buy it during its launch window because that's just not going down significantly ever.
Yep.
Sticking to the PS4, early-ish PS4 era, I caved and then cracked into Yakuza 6, which I'd actually bought for a previous trip, but it's like it's more to do with like, oh, I don't get to use the TV right now. I'm not the only person in this house. I can play this on the ROG Ally, which has proven very useful for like opening up a catalog of games that I can't. I will say though, game is very, very slow to start. Like this is the one that Huso, who somehow became more of an expert in this franchise than me, despite our earlier histories, told me to get instead of 5 because 5 really, really trudged.
Yep.
This franchise
five,
gets
5 trudges in a different way, but
it is a pretty slow start. I want to say it's like 50 minutes before I got any meaningful gameplay. I think you get to beat up one guy. Like there's a tutorial fight and that's about it. And a lot of like cutscene and a visual gag where they make it look like Kiryu's about to do cocaine, but it's actually powdered milk.
Yes.
And yeah,
you
so
get
the
to
whole...
chase that a mascot around as well. Oh no, Michi.
Oh yeah, that's weird having coming from playing another game where you're Yakuza, but you're running a mascot agency. I've just been on a theme this year. I think part of it is actually just playing games that are set in parts of Japan that are not Tokyo.
Yep.
So between Densha Tech last time and Promised Mascot Agency, which is in like a rural part of Kyushu, like for what it's worth, Yakuza 6, I mean, I'm somewhere in chapter 5 at the moment. I expect I will probably end up back in the back streets of Kamurocho in Tokyo.
Not very often.
But yeah, like I've just gotten to a point where it's really made a statement. It's like, no, you are going to be in this kind of countryside part of Hiroshima for a while.
Yeah.
Like a pretty good while. But yeah, after the 40, 50 minutes, whatever it is, like it actually does start to get going. And it's giving me like weird, like as a person without children, give me a weird empathy for the over-controlling dad with a teenage daughter because like you've rescued the son of Haruka, who's a small girl who you rescue in the very first game. And like the thought of her getting knocked up is actually like hurting my brain a little bit. It's like, no, what the fuck? But it's okay because I move on from that disturbance quite quickly because Kiryu, who opened a orphanage in Yakuza 3, has no idea what the fuck he's doing with the baby. Like to a comical degree.
Yes.
So you literally steal it from the hospital. Like earlier in the game, Haruka's in a car accident, protects the baby and she's in a coma. And he's like, I am not having this kid sent to an orphanage. I know what's going to happen. I'm never going to see it again. You literally kidnap a baby and then go into a convenience store going, the kid must be hungry. And you try to buy a rice ball to feed it. just off the bat. And then soon enough, you get like hints at like, Haruka was in Hiroshima. I'm going to try and go there without starting some sort of Yakuza gang war, which could happen because of your history and the clan histories and things, but you go there anyway. You end up in a snack bar, because of course you do, because you're Kazuma Kiryu.
Yep.
Sitting next to a local Yakuza, like right next to the guy who's just chain-smoking away. Still just holding the baby. Thankfully, at one point, one of the writers had the sense to like have somebody in the bar say, hey, maybe don't do that.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is the ultimate, as far as I can tell so far, Kiryu is the hot dad.
Yeah, it's the hot dad game.
Yeah. I mean, they're all to a certain degree a hot dad game, but like now there's actually a baby.
Oh, he's owning it now. Yeah.
Yeah, so there are some like little tweaks, because like all of these, the first six games, they're all basically RPG brawlers.
Yeah.
There's just a couple of things that say different. Like, one, the way they got a little bit more... You can see the beginning, I guess, because they went full RPG with 7. And I guess I changed the name to the Japanese title of Like a Dragon. With, like, the way experience points, like, dealt out here, which... I remember, like, unlocking abilities and things in the earlier games, but here it is, like, you just get experience points after every fight or every time you eat. with a little icon of like how full your tummy is and like what experience points you get if you get a hamburger versus a steak versus a bowl of tofu. And then you have to go into a menu and then like very Western RPG, like actually then kind of like divvy those out like in different ways, like enhance certain statistics. And it doesn't do a great job up front of like explaining that to you as hard as it needs to. So it got really, 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 really fucking hard until I started thinking, why is this really, 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 really hard? And found my way into menus like, oh, these are experience points. I thought when I was getting them, it was just like leveling me up automatically, which would be the very Japanese way
of doing it. Yeah, yeah.
I was just like, no, I can literally like punch three times as hard now if I like unload all of these. And I've literally just gotten to a point. I don't know how significant this is, Yusa. I'm guessing you can say where it is now. I decided it's got Final Fantasy Tactics as a minigame.
I vaguely remember that. It has been quite a while since I've played a lot of Yakuza since then, too. So
hoping this is a little bit like where, I mean, they go big with their minigames sometimes.
Yeah. I think it is. I think it's one of those ones that you can really either sink your teeth into or just ignore completely.
Yeah, I'm hoping I can mostly ignore it.
Yeah.
Because it reminds me of what? Yeah, 8, Infinite Wealth, which is maybe still the best one.
Mm.
Where they basically made Animal Crossing.
Yep.
Like a surprisingly in-depth Animal Crossing just as a side activity.
And a Pokemon Brawler as well.
Yeah, oh, those are in multiple of them though.
Yeah.
And they are stranger than Pokemon for what it's worth. If you need to be sold on one of these games, you just like, was it Sujimon or something it's called? It's just
Sujimon,
like dudes.
Yeah, Sujimon.
It's just dudes who are Pokemon.
Yep.
So yeah, I've literally just gotten to the point where it's like, hey, we're going to give you Final Fantasy Tactics effectively, like assign guys and have them run forward and hopefully not die.
Mm-hmm.
Type stuff, and I think that is the point where it's like, oh, we are staying here for a while. If they are building this gang warfare shit in, which is nice because it's lined up very nicely with the thing. I've just gotten in the last few years very sick of New York, Tokyo, London, like just the checklist big cities in video games. Like any other setting is like doing me something right now.
Right, yeah. When we went to New York, I laughed and joke with my wife that I can find my way around from the amount of time I spent swinging through as Spider-Man. So, you know.
So when I was playing The Division when it first came out, I was living in Manhattan. And I literally refused to take missions in Penn Station. I'm like, nah, you cannot get me to go to Penn Station when I live here. If I could ever avoid it, I'm not voluntarily going in a video
going
game.
Going in a video game.
That shit's a labyrinth nightmare and fucked up, and I am not doing that.
Accurate.
I seem to recall you warning me about this specifically.
Penn Station's a nightmare. Don't do it.
But yeah, Yakuza 6, pretty good. I would say the main draw, I mean, they're like all of these mainline games, they're all good in some way. I'd say the main draw here is that it is set in rural Hiroshima.
Yep. I think the combat is probably the best of the Kiryu
games. The
brawling
feels pretty good,
too.
I actually like that there are no stances so far.
Yeah.
Like that stuff got kind of annoying. It felt less like a feature and more gimmick. It's like this isn't adding any depth. It's just more buttons to press.
Yeah. I think the combat in 6 is probably the best in all the brawling ones.
Yeah, and I've been able to get it running pretty well in a handheld as well. I did have to sacrifice the frame rate. I've gone from 180 to 30. thankfully, when it's a way smaller screen, it doesn't hurt nearly as much.
No.
But I couldn't, without sacrificing too much, get a fairly reliable 60 on the ROG Ally.
Okay.
Or the original Ally X, maybe the next generation, if you're like a multi-millionaire at this point, considering how much stuff is now costs. Could do it, but it's like, okay, I can either try and push for an almost 40, or if I actually go to the minimum power draw, I can still get a stable 30, and this is a lot less fussing around. I'm probably going to get an extra hour of battery life. This is where I'm going to leave it.
Yep.
But, easy one to say if you like these games, get it.
And on sale all the time.
And I was about to say, like, every month and a half, this stuff's going to be on sale on Steam anyway, so...
Yep.
Right, but then on that note, Tamsin, is Civ 6 on sale all the time? I think the answer to that is yes, but why should we buy it instead of 7?
I think even on Switch 2, it's on sale like 90% off perpetually. pretty much everything 2K makes that hasn't been released in the last 3 years is 90% off every time I see it there. So, but yes, Civ 6 is the game I've just finished a playthrough recently because I'm a turn-based nut. It's all turn-based all the time.
Yeah, but this one isn't explicitly murder puzzles, so, you know, it's a little bit
different. But look, murder puzzles are my jam, as we refer to them. They are three-dimensional puzzles which you solve by murdering people. XCOM 2 is the go-to for me. I've unlocked every achievement and spent about 1,000 hours just playing it for funsies to think, and I have the tattoo. But Civ 6, because I work in international security and international humanitarian law, and so all of the everything that's going on in the world right now is really just kind of making a mess of all of my work. So when I'm playing Civ 6 at the moment, I'm like, rightio, I am not going to declare war on anyone ever in the entire playthrough, and I refuse to get a military victory, which is a change. I also refuse to use any fossil fuels to see if I can get through without any sort of climate change impact. And so I finally managed to get a science victory without accidentally getting an accidental diplomatic or cultural victory, which is the previous playthroughs had plagued me with. I was halfway to my science victory with the sending the exoplanet mission off, and it's like, you have won via the UN. And I'm like, oh, get fucked.
I think we know that Tanzania is playing with the food is like, you won. I didn't want to win that way.
Yes. I had a win condition planned from turn one, an accidental cultural victory. Like, who gives a fuck about cultural victories?
Coming from an arts degree a little bit.
I mean, yes, I say that as a culture's important, but yes. I want to win via you know, science. Planetary exploration. Yeah. I don't want to win via diplomacy. Diplomacy's boring. I've been to the UN.
It has been a long time since I've played Civ 6, but I always remember the science one being the hardest one to chase, just because of the amount of research and time it goes into getting that mission up. And yeah,
it's also the dead time of getting the mission to completion point, and because at that point in time, you are also really close to cultural and diplomatic victories. Even if you're not chasing them,
yeah,
and you could have been well through a military victory. That the only one I think that's more difficult is a religious victory, because that's just fucking nuts.
Yeah, and look, let's be honest, no one wants to do that anyway.
No one wants to do that anyway. But yeah, as I said, accidental cultural or diplomatic victory is my usual win, and it really annoys me. So
the idea of like starting a game and thinking I'm just going to start a worldwide cult seems like a pretty fun way to go, actually. But,
worldwide cult.
look, actually, I can see the value in that. You could call it the Catholic Church, and suddenly have worldwide cult.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, there's some value in that. I can appreciate that. And, you know, it's got to be Civ 6, because every time I try and play Civ 7, I get about 100 turns in and go, nah, I'm just isn't working for me. And dump out. It's just like, I've started many times and still never finished a game.
And this is our pro tip to segue to break, actually, is I don't think anybody really likes Civ 7, so yeah.
I didn't mind 7, but at the same time, it felt like a game that could absolutely be a spin-off Civ game instead.
Yeah.
Like, I quite enjoyed it, but it felt like one that sits along 6 quite well as a different experience, but not
for a context, traditional. It feels like calling Chimera Squad a pure XCOM game.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas it's a spin-off.
Chimera Squad's great. Like, yeah. Love Chimera Squad. It's not an XCOM game.
No. It's a hero shooter crossed with XCOM, you know.
Yeah. It's kind of set in the XCOM world, and it does some really good small map,
yep,
turn-based engagement stuff with some really interesting characters, but it's not an XCOM game.
Yeah.
Right, although somewhat hilariously, my recommendation has gone away here now, though, because I just looked it up on Steam, and Civ 7 is currently cheaper than Civ 6, so maybe buy about $7. I'm like...
yep. They're struggling with that one, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But yeah, who knows? I think they are doing some changes to try and bring it into line with 6, but I haven't gone back for a while. So
it's not a bad game. It just doesn't have enough there for a full playthrough for me. My partner loves it. Like, yeah. she will smash it plenty of times, although she's playing in the early access for the new Heroes of Might and Magic at the moment.
Oh, yeah. So, that's good, too.
I refuse
to get stuff on... We're going off the rails.
But I refuse to get stuff on early access because I'm not paying for an incomplete game. So
fair enough.
I don't know yet. I'm really looking forward to it, though.
Yeah. Well, we can keep ranting about that, but we're going to do it in our own time. We'll take a quick drink / rave about early access break. And when we come back, we're going to, I don't know, rank pirate stuff. Back, and yeah, we're gonna. I've got two things to do here. It depends on how we go for time. One, I'm just gonna kind of rank. Actually, no, I say rank is a scary word. I'm getting very sick of YouTube videos of like that tier, S tier, A tier, B tier list. We're not doing that.
No.
We're just like kind of deciding which pirate characters in video games are cool, and then maybe like making a short list of something of like games that are also cool.
Yeah.
Before we get into that though, like Tamsa, we are going to just be very loosey goosey with our definition of pirate. We're going to have fun. Do you want to tap the sign beforehand though, just to get it out of your system?
Which one? That states can't commit piracy? It's legally
that's
impossible?
That's probably the main sign, yeah.
That's the main sign. That's the sign that I tap all the time, every time someone says that maritime violence that someone has done is piracy. I'm like, no, it wasn't. Legally not, because it was done by the US military and states can't commit piracy.
Unless they've all mutinied, I guess, but
unless they've all mutinied. Yes, by saying it's piracy, you are saying that the entire crew has mutinied and the state is no longer responsible. So therefore, states can't commit piracy legally. And every bit of violence that happens on the ocean isn't automatically piracy. Sometimes
I think that's the main thing. Like, it can be horrific without it being piracy.
Yeah, it can be horrific and wrong and all of these other things without it having to be piracy. The way people lose their fucking mind when they hear the word piracy, and I'm talking about it in a professional context of like lawyers, is insane. Otherwise, reasonable, sensible people who understand concepts of logic and consequence lose their fucking mind when the idea of pirates enters it. It's insane.
Yeah, the easy way to think is like, because we also have a weird cultural habit of like, you know, idealizing pirates to a certain degree, especially in the early aughts, this whole free men.
Oh, yeah. The big one to say is that privateering, while it looks like piracy, not the same, really legally distinct. And so while we may be talking about characters who are doing privateering now as pirates, they're not pirates. They're privateers, and very important distinction. You can go read my forthcoming book if you want to understand the reasons why.
But also, those distinctions are not going to matter too much in the discussion.
For this conversation, I care about them, but that sign needs tapping every time this happens, because it happens way too often. And I never thought, as a, you know, junior legal researcher, that the 1856 Declaration of Paris would be my most discussed piece of international law. It's three lines, and one of them is piracy is hereby and forever abolished. Privateering is hereby and forever and abolished. So you cut to ban privateering. And somehow that's become my most discussed piece of international law in my career. Usually every time a US senator says the Constitution says we can issue letters of marque, so we should just restart privateering to deal with whatever maritime problem they have at the moment. and I have to go to your car, international law says no.
Yes.
I don't Sorry, think I care there's my rant. There we go. I'm done with that rant.
So I'm the more fun thing. I also, like, told you what the topic was, and you immediately said, oh, it's clearly LeChuck. But then after that, I feel like there were, like, five more, like, but actually's. Kind of like
there was kind of, like, some serious but actually's after I went, like, clearly it's the ghost pirate LeChuck. And then I'm like, hang on, no. It's really not the ghost pirate LeChuck. There's, like, six more options in my mind, and, like, five of them are from Skies of Arcadia.
Yeah, right. This game gets to have its due. I should have gone downstairs and bought my physical copy, which I actually brought home with me. It's like one of the few best games
I'm biased. It's one of my most favorite games of all time, but mostly because I spent most of my life wanting to be a Sky Pirate. Even before I knew that Skies of Arcadia existed, that was like the ideal future, was a steampunk Sky Pirate. Just how I ended up studying piracy instead, because apparently that's not a viable career.
Well, you know.
Well, it's interesting because we are putting, if we are putting Vise and Ica, who are apparently are a package deal.
They are a package deal, Vise and
at the
Ica
front here,
are a
man.
Package
this,
deal.
This game has an attitude that would be very difficult to create today. This game is like optimism endless.
Right? Yeah, it is like classic steampunk in terms of the vibes. So, like, for me, Vibes and Ica, package deal, you can't have one without the other. Those two are joined at the hip in terms of their friendship. They appear as a duo. They exist as a duo. We need to consider them as a duo. However,
now, at one point, they are separated, and the dungeon that they complete, at the end, they kind of come in from different sides, and the treasure they find is literally your friendship was a treasure all along. Like on the piece of paper.
Exactly. So that even when they're separated, they're working together. They are a package deal. However, before we get to all of the, as far as I'm concerned, the other Skies of Arcadia characters who need to be in this list, we have Isabel from the Dragon Age series, and she is awesome, if nothing for the other, for the reason that when she betrays you in the Fade, she literally says, I like big boats and I cannot lie. And, like, you cannot ignore the piratiness of that with the Sir Mix-a-Lot reference. So, I don't know, also a favorite, if nothing, if only for that scene. So, but, you know, in terms of awesome piratiness, Enrique, who didn't get a mention in the Blue Sky chat that we were having, has to feature. He's a prince who goes, no, fuck this, steals a flagship and goes off and pirates against his own nation.
Well, the monarch is, like, mutinying against itself. That is pretty up there.
Yeah, like, that's pretty piratey. Mm. That's some pretty epic pirating. And... you know, the whole Blue Rogues vibe that also encapsulates then Gilda and Claudia.
All right, we're back to Skies of Arcadia again now.
In the Skies of Arcadia is very frankly, it's like, we are pirates for good. We are just going to steal from rich people.
Especially the English version, because this was like 2001, I think it like came out.
Yeah,
this
like
is back
that.
When like references to alcohol just could not exist in video games outside of Japan. And so they were clearly drinking grog or rum or something in the original, but it was just turned to fruit juice.
Yeah, there was this relentless optimism. So look, most of my favorite pirates, with the exception of Isabella and the ghost pirate LeChuck, are Skies of Arcadia references, characters. And you know what? I stand by it. The game was awesome. The only thing that was bad about the game is the thing that plagues many RPGs, which is random encounters.
Turn-based battles.
Turn-based battles are fine. It's the random encounters that are the problem.
No, it's that screen freezing and shattering like every 3 seconds when you're actually in the skies.
Yeah. It's like, I'm busy. Stop it. So, but yeah, that's kind of the list of the ones that come to mind for me. And I said, three franchises represented in that. I'm sure I've missed a few. The nameless character from Sid Meier's Pirates, be it the original 80s version or the 2004 remake, was kind of fine, but doesn't really rate as a character, as far as I'm concerned.
It is interesting that you went to Monkey Island and you didn't touch on Guybrush, who is actually a weirdly complicated like classification here. I've asked you before about like what his relationship with the governor actually does to his status as a pirate.
That conversation, yeah, the legal implications of his relationship with the governor. And the answer is, it depends.
But he definitely has a "I am a pirate" attitude. So I'm just for this, I'm gonna like give it to him.
Yeah, look, I don't mind Guybrush, and you know, the whole he's pretty awesome. But like in terms of pirate vibes in Monkey Island, the ghost pirate LeChuck just has so much swagger.
So the real question I had here was, does Murray count? Like, was he I presume he was a pirate before he got sunk and all his flesh, you know, eaten off his body and then his skull bobbled back up on a bit of flotsam.
I mean, I'm okay with it. We don't have evidence that he wasn't a pirate. And if we're going with vibes-based pirating...
He is going in hard.
Yeah, but we have we're going...
The only catch is it really just has to be Curse of Monkey Island Murray, because they were never able to recapture that. They keep on bringing him back, but they never recaptured it again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this is true. This is true. But as I said, the ghost pirate LeChuck just has so much swagger, so much vindictive pirate swagger that, you know, Jeffrey Rush just couldn't channel properly as Captain Barbossa. He tried. He tried.
Oh, man. Drive-by and Jeffrey Rush.
Yeah.
There is one character who you probably don't actually know, Tams, and who is like going to be like, in terms of like the best idea of like, we are going to take this character and make him a pirate. I'm going to probably leave this to Huso because I think you know who I'm talking about.
Would that be Majima?
It would be Majima.
The Mad Dog makes a great pirate because he is clinically insane to begin with. So, it just works and over
like
the top
wake
and
up
ridiculous.
On a beach and decide I'm going to be a pirate is actually very Guybrush like.
Yeah, yeah, it was very cool. It is a fun transition for a character that kind of just amusingly suits that kind of situation, like no other I can think of would. You know, it was cool. Like the game itself was fun, but it wasn't really essential. But yeah,
I mean,
just
it was
the
a side
idea.
Project. It was
yeah, yeah. Like, it felt like that, but. It was certainly a lot of fun being the Mad Dog and controlling him for the whole game and then watching him partake in some piracy.
So I'm unfamiliar with the character or the
So
name.
He's from the Yakuza game. So Mad Dog, yeah, he was a Yakuza lieutenant and one of Kiryu's kind of friends slash enemies for a very long time. And He was called the Mad Dog because he was a bit nuts. And he gets amnesia and wakes up and decides to become a pirate.
Yeah, I support that.
Yeah, yeah. Look, and
it fits.
It's around
the
Hawaii.
Trailer dropped and everyone was like, yeah, I can see that.
Yep. Really suited the character. Yep.
Yeah, no, I support that as like career choices.
Yeah, yeah. It felt obvious, but it was a lot of fun. I like some different ones. I think one of the best designs I've seen out there is Cervantes.
I'm talking Soul Calibur, Cervantes.
Yeah, yes, yeah, yeah. I think he's got a really cool, like menacing, like proper menacing. You don't see a lot of menacing pirates in video games as
his
much.
Even his fight style, actually, like it's just very swift, hard hits. Like there's finesse.
It's all about efficiency of movement, you know, and stuff like that too. So he's a very cool design. I don't know. He's a fighting game character.
And he brings
so
this gun to a sword fight as well, if I remember correctly.
Absolutely
does.
That is
like the most piratey thing you can do.
Yeah, yeah. There's no mucking around. He's a really cool design character. I really like Black Flag's interpretation of Blackbeard. It's probably got 4/5 of bugger all to do with the reality of Blackbeard, but I really like how they presented him there as a persona that this person takes on to kind of amp up his legend and make life easier as a pirate by creating this persona of
not having played Black Flag because the Assassin's Creed games when I tried them in the early versions kind of just bored me on the gameplay loop. They're basically saying that Blackbeard is the Dread Pirate Roberts. Is that what I'm hearing?
Not necessarily. No, no. He's not exactly a nice fellow.
Oh no, but just a case of like, you know, you keep passing on who the Blackbeard is, like the Dread Pirate Roberts keeps getting passed on.
In the game, he creates the persona of Blackbeard. So his name is Thatch, I think. He was referred to as Thatch by everyone. Okay. And then he starts putting, you know, the fuse in his beard to create that kind of smoky effect. And then he uses the drama of the situation to create this fear amongst his victims. So it was a really cool way to look at it. And, you know, especially someone that character.
Edward Teach did do all those things to create his Captain Blackbeard persona. Edward Teach, historically, we have evidence of Edward Teach doing all of that.
Oh, well, that's cool then. I had no idea if it was true or not, but it felt like a really good way to kind of introduce this character and bring him into this world that you're kind of playing in. I thought that was a really cool design. But yeah, they'd be the two I think of immediately when I thought of pirates is the Blackbeard interpretation and then Cervantes from Soul Calibur.
I'm in this weird situation. I've got one that's kind of, it shouldn't be spoilery, but it is just because of the way of remakes and shit work.
Mm.
Because they're taking way too long to remake all of Final Fantasy VII. but also that game came out in 1997, so sue me if you don't know what happens already. Yeah. But if I remember correctly, Sid, who we have met in the remake already, eventually, and Tamsin is going to be the one who gets to pass judgment on, like, does this actually make him a pirate or not, does effectively steal a rocket ship to fly into space from Shinra Corporation.
I'm on board with space piracy. Absolutely. I almost made reference to the, like, Buck Rogers Countdown to Doomsday game as a piracy thing, because I'm pretty certain from memory you do engage in a whole bunch of space piracy going on there by boarding other people's ships.
I mean, the ships, like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm on board with this. This is cool. This is fine. Yeah, he can be a pirate.
But also, like, stealing a rocket is a pretty high level.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty badass.
Yep.
There's space piracy is fine. Space piracy is still piracy. Even legally. Oh,
Star Ocean.
Yeah, I reckon we could adapt it, Mutatis Mutandis, just to make the high seas the high void.
Yeah. There's so many space pirate games. Like, it seems to be in almost all space games in some point. Like, even back to the original X-Wing and TIE Fighter games, there was certain missions which were absolute space piracy. So Free Space, all those, Wing Commander, they all had it.
All the Elite games, like Elite, Frontier, Elite 2, and the more recent, I say more recent, was about, 12 years ago, the most recent Elite game?
It's still going.
It's still going?
Yep.
Yeah. It gave me motion sickness, so I couldn't play it, but it looked really cool. But you could go off and be a pirate in the Elite games way back in the late 80s, early 90s. Every space game is all about having pirates.
I think even in
Mass Effect, the Mass Effect games, you're saving the universe, but you make a stop to deal with some pirates periodically.
yeah, well, they're an easy target for a side mission.
yeah, it's just like, yeah, we're saving the galaxy from Reapers, but hang on, some pirates done annoyed one of my crew members.
Yeah, he pinched his favorite little toy when he was a kid, and now he wants it back. Yeah.
From with RPGs, sometimes don't really keep the perspectives in the right sequence. I mince my words, but I think we know where we're going with this.
But you do then get to, like, save the universe with a toothbrush in Mass Effect 3. So, you know, do we really want that much perspective if we could use a toothbrush to save the universe?
Yeah, fair.
I really wanted to come out with something from Space Quest 3.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it is called The Pirates of Pestilion, but there's not a whole lot of piracy in it, unless you count the head of the evil Scumsoft Software Corporation who kidnapped the two guys from Andromeda. I'm like forcing the makes up, and I go, even then he's not really quite software piracy. Like, I'm trying to squeeze this.
Yeah, I can't remember that game well enough to
not quite get an introduce out of it.
No. I've got a really good pirate game, but the individual characters themselves aren't so memorable.
Let's just move on to like good games now, I guess. Like,
well, that's Shadow Gambit, and it was one that people missed. It was the guys that created Desperados 3 and Shadow Tactics. So it is once again a kind of stealth tactics turn-based game. This time you're kind of leading this crew of supernatural undead pirates that all have different skills, and it was a really, really well put together game, really well reviewed. The people that found it really liked it, but so many people missed it, and
I missed it, and I am all about the turn base. So
it is fantastic. I really, really enjoyed that game.
I really like Shadow Tactics.
It's the same team.
It's well up my alley, and I missed it.
Well, it's currently only $17, I think. So, or $14.
My brain is just remember the word SteamWorld.
SteamWorld Heist is amazing.
Yeah, lots of fun. Like this 2D take on XCOM.
The art and the vibes in that game were great.
Game is amazing. Love that game.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool pirate game. I mean, I think Sea of Thieves deserves its bickies. Like, it came in a bit.
It has some Monkey Island content as well, so.
Yeah, and some Pirates of the Caribbean content. I mean, it's live service, yes, and I tend to avoid them, but I can't deny they took that game from a place that was okay when it launched, and now it's got this thriving community. People really enjoy just getting involved with their crew. It's obviously a game that you need to have a regular group with, which is hard for a lot of people, but those that do seem to really enjoy it. My son plays it every now and then with his mates, and I watch quite often in awe kind of how they all work together on their ship and do the jobs, and they really get into the role play of a pirate and go off and sail the high seas. So I think that's a game that deserves its bickies, even though it's probably not a game that we would like, you know.
Ballpark. I think I would like it if I was 20 and had the capacity and the friends who also had the capacity to like say, all right, every Wednesday night we're gonna play this for 2 hours.
Yeah. And that's the sort of game it is. But yeah. I think it deserves, and you know, it's got that rare kind of quirkiness to it that I was always welcome too. So yeah.
This is also probably worth shouting out. The last Monkey Island was actually very good. Escape was disappointing. The Telltale ones were kind of okay.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of the Telltale games generally, but the Monkey Island ones in particular just didn't grab me. Didn't enjoy them.
But I still... And this is where the generational gap is. I'm still Curse of Monkey Island all the way. And that's where the split happens between 2 and 3. Like, the really old school fans will be for 2, and I'm sitting there going, nah.
Yep.
I think. And it's probably just because of Murray, actually, if I'm like honest with myself. Like,
and the other one I think needs a big shout out is Sid Meier's Pirates.
Yeah.
Which one?
I remember playing the original and the 2004, so the 87 or 88.
It was 87
original.
Or 88, yeah. And then
the 2004 reboot, which was excellent.
Yeah.
I have complaints now as someone who does a whole bunch of feminist scholarship of there was no reason from a gameplay mechanical point of view in the reboot why they couldn't let you play a woman.
Okay.
There was no reason. And so I kind of end up with a bunch of complaints about games I don't play because there's no plot reason that you're forcing me to be a dude. So I'm not going to play it. You know, that's just a personal thing, but it was an excellent game. Loved it. But
and the way it mixed like kind of all these different elements into essentially what were mini games, I guess, but they were a bit deeper than mini games. And
The whole we're going to go to the governor's ball and do a dance.
and
the random sword fighting and the like excellent naval combat. It's like I'm just gonna get close, use some chain shot, and then board.
Or
if you're completely outnumbered and they've got a bigger ship, like, I'm just going to avoid your cannons and heck careen into the front of your ship and hope I win the sword fight before I run out of crew.
Yep. Yeah, there were some ways to work around the systems like that, but it was really good. I played that. I think I had that on the original Xbox and played the hell out of that.
I played the 87 version on the Amiga 500.
Yep.
And then their reboot on PC.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and in terms of Monkey Island, how are we not having Secret of Monkey Island as the conversation, the original Monkey Island?
See, there's debates amongst the first three.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. See, Secret of Monkey Island was always my go-to Monkey Island.
I got into Monkey Island late. I think it wasn't until the third one that I really got into it.
Yeah, the third one was also when I jumped in, which is always it's a Mario Kart thing. Your favorite Mario Kart is always your first.
Yeah. See, I started in with Secret of Monkey Island when it was released in like 1990, so it was kind of that's the definitive Monkey Island for me. And as I would have been like 7 at the time, the Ghost Pirate LeChuck was truly menacing for a 7-year-old.
Oh, yeah, so, stuff that can, like, terrify you as a primary school student, sometimes kind of surprising, even if it's meant to be comedic.
Yeah, as I said, as a 7-year-old kind of in this, you know, adventure game, that was like, oh, this dude's menacing, he's evil. Like, and that stuck with me as, like, you know, definitive video game pirate because of that initial 1990, you know, playthrough of The Secret of Monkey Island.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, Sid Meier's Pirates was excellent. Love it. I haven't played it yet because I keep getting very, very mixed reviews. But the new
Windrose?
Flint. Oh, no.
Flint. Yes, I have Flint. Seen Flint. Yeah.
Flint. I can't remember the subtitle for it, but that one that's kind of based off Treasure Island.
Yeah.
It's one that's kind of there to check out, but I keep on going, oh, I don't have enough time to play a game that sucks.
I mean, that's generally a pretty good life philosophy.
And all the reviews keep going, great idea, terrible execution.
Yeah.
Is what I keep reading. So I haven't played it yet, but it's been on my list since it kind of got announced because I love a turn-based tactical pirate game.
That sounds exactly 100% your thing, actually.
Absolutely my thing, yeah.
A little bit sad that I never played Zack and Wiki, but man, the Wii just came and went.
Yes.
Or just came and then got really uninteresting really fast. Like, there was half a year, it was like, this console seems like super, like, just untapped potential, and then... And I don't think Zack and Wiki ever got, like, re-released on anything either, actually.
No, I don't think so. It's the only Wii game that didn't.
That's really, really, really kind of sad. I almost forgot to, like, shout out that technically Zelda is a pirate in one of the games. If you know, you know. If you don't, then I guess I won't say it because, you know, I guess that's technically a spoiler. Although, based on what those games are like, you can probably guess which one it is already.
Civ 6 also has a scenario map where you beat pirates and you have an entire change of rule structure to go around raiding with your pirate ships, and you win by collecting as much gold as possible in the scenario timeline. And that's always fun. For a different kind of pirate game, you can go boot up Civ 6 and play the pirate scenario.
And it's time to reset the counter, Tim. Tropico 2 was pirate.
I was wondering if that was going to be able to come up or not. I was like, oh, technically you're the government, so I don't know if he's going to make this.
No, in 2 you're not. In Tropico 2 is the only one that's different from the rest of the Tropico games where you actually play the Pirate King is your role instead of El Presidente. And so, yes, you... you build up a pirate empire, basically Tortuga. But yeah, that's what you do in Tropico 2. In Tropico 5 and 6, there are pirate missions where you have a smuggler's cove and a pirate bay where you can kind of encourage them. But that would, I mean, I'm going to defer to the legal expert here, but it was government sanctioned. So that'd be privateering, would it
that'd
not?
That'd be privateering.
Yes.
and however, if done after 1856, just war crimes.
Just war crimes.
If done after 1856 with a bit of a fuzzy period through that late 19th century, it's just war crimes rather than, you know, even piracy or privateering.
So considering the time frame of Tropico 6 is around the Bay of Pigs era, it's probably just war crimes.
It's just war crimes. So,
how very droll.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not so much pirating or privateering as it is just war crimes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, actually, XCOM 2 kind of piratey.
Yeah, wow, guerrillery. I would have said guerrilla would have been my first name.
Yeah, but you're doing all this from your ship.
Oh, I guess, yeah, okay.
Yeah, you have this alien spaceship that you have stolen to run your global resistance/terrorist organization, and you just show up, fuck shit up, and fly off again.
You're almost Viking-like.
Yeah, so it's a case of, for a bro, if we're including space pirates, XCOM 2, you play the space pirates.
Wow, you found a loophole to mention your favorite game. All right.
We'd already discussed it anyway.
Yeah.
Surely we had.
Somehow, always still finding a way to bring everything back to XCOM is basically
Well, that's because at. There is. XCOM 2 was the perfect game.
I'm not going to try and argue this because Huso is also on the call and I'm going to be in a very much a minority. But it is probably time to just about wrap this up. So, yeah, Huso, thank you very much for like coming home early, even if it was actually the rain's fault.
Yeah, it was the rain's fault, but I'll say that it was for you, Tim. I did it for you.
All right, can you crystal ball? Can you crystal ball anything that's going to be landing on the site or enemy?
I've got some hardware reviews going up because they take longer, so I can crystal ball them a bit easier. And by the time this comes up, I'll have a Halo Campaign Evolved review with Paul up. And that's about all I can guarantee you at this point in time.
And also, yeah, speaking of, you know, Microsoft at the moment, fuck Microsoft piracy, you know where I'm going with this. not official advice, so I don't know where that sounds. But then, Tamsin, jumping in at the last minute to like bring in, again, way too many qualifications.
Yeah.
Do you want to plug your own podcast while you're here?
Okay, sure. Look, if any of you are interested in international law and current events, you can check out Call to the Bar, International Law Over Drinks, where we're in season 3 at the moment, up to about 80-something episodes, where we regularly discuss something, current events and how this affects or is affected by international law, which includes an episode on how everybody loses their fucking mind when you use the word pirates. so if that's your thing, I'm not thinking there'll be much crossover between international law podcasts and video game podcast audience. But hey,
you never know.
If you are in that Venn diagram, go forth, check it out.
And yeah. Don't get too excited about the overdrinks thing either, because I record in the morning from my understanding and it's always fucking tea and coffee.
Well, I also don't drink, personally.
I mean, yeah, but you're not recording it by yourself. Occasionally somebody has a bottle of wine, but that's about it.
Yeah, that's mostly somebody has a bottle of wine. It depends
sometimes
on the time
zones. Fucking instant coffee as well. I'm so angry
God,
about.
Yeah, look, I'm not even going to defend Dina on that one. but the problem we have is that, you know, international things, time zones, frequently it's morning in Australia when it's... evening elsewhere.
Where it's a more respectable drinking hour elsewhere.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So we had a shout out to Mike Becker, though, who was a guest at 8 in the morning in Ireland when he came on the podcast, still rocked up with an Irish whiskey, not just an Irish whiskey that is called Writer's Tears.
Right, yep.
So shout out to him for, like,
you know what, again, having been to Dublin earlier this year, I fully believe it. Coffee in Ireland, sorry guys, is bad. It's just too weak. You can't taste the actual coffee. But it means the one time I did order an Irish coffee,
I don't know if they actually
call it that. Yeah, it basically was just whiskey with a little bit of milk. I'm not sure there was any coffee in there.
but it's a case of, I will give props to Mike Becker for showing up at 8 a.m. with
it wasn't
glass
even
of
like
Irish
a spiked
whiskey.
Coffee or like a like Crisp Lager or something.
It was a neat Irish whiskey called Writer's Tears. I'm like, my dude, you are excellent. So yes, you're more than welcome if you want to have a listen to that podcast. See if you find it interesting, go forth.
Go forth, hands with. And I have no idea what I'm going to have up on the site from now. I will take a portable console with me, and maybe Huso will say, hey, here's a key, do this. Or maybe he won't, who knows? Like, I'm getting back before September, though, so.
Yeah. I'll be using everyone on the staff. We'll be working their ass off come September.
Got it.
Yeah, the whole industry just like pickled itself into this very bad situation.
Absolutely. Yep, it's going to be crazy.
It's a weird idea that Grand Theft Auto 6 would kind of save it.